Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to the Repack, presented by Acme Packing Company. I'm Justice Mosqueda. I'm joined here by Evan Tex Western. Say what's up to people, Tex.
Hey, what's up, everybody? When is the NFL gonna, you know, stop having a four-week preseason? Like, I really think they should go to three preseason games instead of four. Because, 2 years in a row, man. This is rough.
Between this and my Oregon Ducks starting out the season with an absolute blowout. Not great. Not a great way to start the football season. The Green Bay Packers lost to the Minnesota Vikings. It was not pretty. It was not pretty at all. They lost to a tune of 23-7. Could have been closer, I guess you could say. But even then, I don't think the direct points add up, right? So we get the Christian Watson dropped, could have been bomb touchdown. That could have been seven, so we're up to 14. And then we get the fourth and one, was it?
Fourth and goal at the one. Yep.
The read option play where Rodgers decided to hand it off instead of pull it himself. He said in the postgame presser that he could have pulled it himself there. And that was the right read because Za'Darius Smith was just screaming off the edge. So that would have gotten you to 21. 21 still doesn't beat 24, though.
Well, if they do that, then they're not going for it on fourth down towards the end of the game in the fourth quarter to kick a field goal. That gets your extra three. So
coming up with hypothetical wins.
Oh, and
this is what they do to us.
Man, if Watson doesn't drop that on the first play, this is a whole different offense, I think, right? Like, maybe Rodgers actually throws another ball to Watson again before the end of the fourth quarter. Any number of things, you know, can happen from there. But just another frustrating, ugly, out of sync week one loss.
Bright side. Special teams didn't look bad.
Mostly competent looking for the most part. Oh, you know,
there was one return.
Yeah, no glaring issues.
One punt return, one extra point attempt, no field goals. Kind of hard to look bad in that scenario, but they were punting and they were holding up as punters. I will say with the injuries that they had, you know, multiple linebackers going down and Barnes and Walker, those guys, I believe, start next to each other in punt protection on the right side as guard and tackle. So if they go out, those are usually positions that they want to play inside linebackers at. And if they're out, I mean, they're kind of out of inside linebackers.
So your boy Ray Wilborn is going to get a call up next week. I feel pretty confident in that. Well, and if that's a broken leg for Barnes, I mean, that's at least a long-term injury. He's going to go on IR. Wilborn probably comes up, takes his spot on the 53, and would imagine probably takes some of those reps on special teams then.
Yeah, that seems like the most significant injury of the game was definitely Barnes. He was carted off with an air cast. We also had John Runyon Jr. Leave the game at left guard. Zach Tom replaced him. I thought Zach Tom did pretty good.
Looked fine. Yeah, looked fine.
Runyon got a concussion, literally banging Rodgers' helmet on a sack. That was not great. That wasn't great. I think Rodgers said on that sack, there was some sort of blown protection. And it sounded like he wasn't really putting a lot on the offensive line. It sounded like the tight ends kind of messed up.
I remember we had talked about it a little bit. Somebody said something about maybe yelling at Tonyan, or maybe I'm getting plays confused now. I don't know.
That was the interception.
That's right. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, if that's the case, I mean, that's something that's interesting too. You know, we had talked about kind of coming into this game that right tackle is almost more important than left tackle, right, for this Packers team in terms of Jenkins or Bakhtiari being able to suit up, because the replacement at right tackle is Newman, which then puts Jake Hansen on the field. And Jake Hansen at right guard was getting his butt kicked. He literally gave up the Za'Darius Smith sack that I had been having nightmares about this entire week.
Yeah, he got that out of the way early, too. I mean, that was early on in the first half. And it just kind of was that was one where you could start to feel things just getting out of hand a little bit early when that one hit.
Well, one thing Robert Tonyan actually said when he, I listened to the podcast he had on with Bussin' the Boys, the, you know, former NFL guy. I guess Taylor Lewan's not former, but I don't think he was on that show. But Tonyan was basically saying that, like, last year, one thing that really sucked for him is when he was coming back, he was finally able to kind of contribute as a pass catcher because their left tackle situation had kind of stabilized. Whereas when he came in, he was more worried about or they were using him more to, like, chip guys. And I just kept thinking of, like, that chip that he had on, like, Nick Bosa and stuff. And I do kind of wonder, like, until Bakhtiari comes back, I don't know if they're going to let Robert Tonyan, like, actually be the pass catcher that we're used to him being. You know, they're just going to keep using him as a chip guy. And it is what it is. They got to get through football games and stuff like that. But it's just like you could feel the ripple effects of Bakhtiari not being on the field, like, felt throughout the offense.
Right. Well, and do we feel good about him coming back next week against Chicago? I don't know where. I feel like we've felt so many times that we know what's going on.
Play.
Right. And that's right. Woods said that they were Ryan Wood, I think, said that he was going to be out for next week's game too.
Yeah.
If he's ready to play, put him out there. Like, what are we waiting for? both him and Jenkins. Like, I don't really understand the approach. If you're out there getting team reps in practice, I will be very curious to see if LaFleur gets picked on that a little bit this week in the pressers.
Well, last time, did you hear him on Friday? What he said?
I don't think we've talked since. No.
So
yeah.
On Friday they asked him, because he had the presser after practice, right? David Bakhtiari was a limited participant in Wednesday and Thursday. He practiced in the team drills, even though he was listed as limited. And then he just didn't play at all on Friday. And they asked him, like, hey, what's the reasoning for Bakhtiari being out? LaFleur says, yes. I'm not really going to talk about injuries. The injury list is the injury list. And it's,
oh,
like,
my God.
Dude, we're doing this again. He got hurt on New Year's Day 2020 or New Year's Eve 2020.
Like, I know that it wasn't your run-of-the-mill ACL tear. I get that. And I get, you know, everything that's going on. But the coming back, the practicing, the going back and not playing, like, I feel for the guy. I'm sure he's, you know, Bakhtiari himself is as frustrated as anybody, if not more so than anybody else about this whole thing. It's just, it's just still leaving us with more questions than answers. And
it's kind of crazy too, because they keep talking about, you know, we don't want to put these guys at long-term risk. And I understand that, all that, right? How much more long-term can you go with Bakhtiari? Next year, they can cut him and save cap space.
Well, I mean, you're also
a massive contract.
And you're also putting Aaron Rodgers at long-term risk, right? Like, there was a moment there where we all thought that he was done.
He was stretching his neck. Four helmets hit each other at the same time. That wasn't good.
No. So you're putting him at risk too with not putting these guys out there. So
they're putting me at long-term risk. The longer these guys don't stay out there, it is frustrating. And I don't want to put everything on the tackles. I mean, it certainly
pass
protection wasn't the biggest issue today. Honestly, it was probably the defense just not being able to pass off Justin Jefferson in quarters. That was crazy. I've never seen the safeties get lit up the way that they were lit up today, because that's really where it seemed the problems were.
Yeah. And Adrian Amos has been so good, so solid for so long for this team, right? Like, he feels like the best of those four big signings from 2019 so far. Certainly the one who's lived up to his contract the most, and is the only guy who's still here now on that fourth year of that same deal, because Preston got his renegotiated and redone. So to see him struggle as much as he did was very surprising and rather disappointing. But yeah, all of those crossers just killing this team nonstop. Well, I'm sure we'll talk about Jair and some of the stuff when we get to the defense, but yeah, that secondary needs to get its shit together real soon.
Yeah. All right, let's start with the offense. Let's go into a deep dive. I guess we'll go position by position, just kind of like our thoughts. Quarterback, how bad was this game for Rodgers? It felt like he was just throwing a couple of them up, right? Like the interception, Randall Cobb, that was just, screw it, someone blew a protection, I'm mad, let's make something happen. I trust Randall. Like, that's what that felt like to me.
There were a couple of plays where it felt like Rodgers from 2019 just chucks it out of bounds. And for some reason, he was holding onto the ball a lot today, it seemed like. Even when pressure was bearing down on him, I don't know if he just didn't have like a good feel for the pressure in this game, or if, you know, maybe some of that is a little bit of rust getting knocked off or what, but he just did not seem comfortable recognizing, navigating through pressure, and then, you know, making a safer play as opposed to trying to hold on and see if a big play would develop. So that was a little frustrating to me. And then again, you know, not going back to Watson at all after the deep ball. You always wonder about Rodgers with the rookie receivers, right? And we know there's mental mistakes that are taking place out there for these guys. He said it after the game that, you know, he'll live with the physical mistakes, but it's the mental ones that always drive him crazy. And we've known that about him for years, right? Guys running the wrong routes, guys, you know, not being on the same page with him. That's gonna always be the thing that gets him yelled at. And I think we definitely hit the over, right, on number of times Rodgers was yelling at people. I think we might have hit it by halftime. So
I think so too. Yeah. we joked at halftime on the Twitter spaces. We joked, you know, 3.5 over under Jordan Love passes in this game, and we hit the over.
Yep. Yeah, that last drive.
I don't know what the hell they were doing that last drive. It must have just been getting him reps, right?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, you're down 13 with what, 35 seconds left. Just at that point, throw him out there and
they spiked it with 1 second left.
Yeah.
They had to take Kevin O'Connell's getting ready to celebrate his first win as an NFL head coach, and they had to tell him to get back on the sideline. They're actually running another play. That was weird. Usually don't see that. I mean, I'm sure they knew, right? Like, we saw last year with, who was it? Harbaugh and Fangio. Where Harbaugh was running Lamar Jackson at the end of a game in kind of a similar situation because he wanted to keep the consecutive 100 yards rushing thing going.
That's right. Yeah.
But like, I guess it's different when the backup quarterback is in, but these are professional players. Like, the last thing you want to do if you're the Minnesota Vikings in that spot is like get one of your players hurt going against Jordan Love in meaningless minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the preseason was for. He didn't get enough reps in the preseason. Come on.
Well, and then that that play after the spike was like a 23-yarder to Watson, I think, too, right? So
I thought he became the team leader in receiving yards after that. I hadn't looked at it closely. Speaking of preseason and Russ getting knocked off, Rodgers made it pretty clear in the postgame presser that he didn't want people writing about how the team needs to play in preseason this year.
Yeah.
I thought that was funny. The other thing, we talked about this in the APC Slack during the entire game, because we started seeing like this narrative kind of just started to happen on like Twitter. Like, you could just see it like naturally, people just coping, right? The Vikings didn't play in the preseason either.
Exactly.
So what's their excuse? And they have a brand new offense and defense.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that argument doesn't hold up for me at all, especially the way that this game went, knowing that Minnesota was doing the exact same thing. So no, I don't buy that one bit.
As far as the running backs go, they did do some penny stuff, some pony stuff. It was pony is the two back personnel stuff that they do. It was interesting that they just basically ran the same stuff from last year. I mean, it's one of the guys in jet motion. It's one of the guys doing a bubble. Like, it's not very creative. Like, one guy's going to run a bubble and for a screen, and the other guy's going to stay in the box, and Rodgers is going to RPO count it. Like,
there were no real wrinkles to it. And I can only hope that they've got some stuff coming and that they maybe trying to reserve it for as the season goes along, because there was nothing there that we haven't seen before.
As far as creativity, cause we did see, you know, it was surprising that they only had two running backs on the active roster, I thought, and the game day roster. The fact that they didn't call up either Goodson or Patrick Taylor, I thought was a little surprising.
But especially if you're going to use that much pony, right? Yeah. You know, if you're going to put your only two active running backs on the field together that much, would think you'd have a backup plan, unless Amari was the backup plan.
That's what I was going to say, but Amari didn't take any snaps there.
No. Right?
The only real creative thing I think I saw in the run game, well, I guess here's 2 points of note for the run game. One, they're running power more than they usually do, where they pull a guard. They really, the Packers are probably, in terms of like the percentages, right? Like they pull their guards less than just about anybody in the league, if not anybody, right? Yeah. So the fact that they were doing that, especially with Jake Hansen in at right guard, I thought that was kind of surprising that they were doing that when he was kind of being featured in that way. Cause it's a lead block, right? Like you're kind of almost featuring those guys when you're running plays like that. So they were doing that. They were running RPOs and stuff off of that stuff. And then the other thing were the end arounds, right?
Right.
They had both of the rookies got an end around. Rodgers led block for one of them and was like, yeah, I'm giving Za'Darius a shoulder. And Za'Darius was like, I'm giving Aaron Rodgers a shoulder. Rodgers got de-cleated, tried to stay. It looked like a boxer trying to stand up when he's like clear, like the lights are off. You know, he just like stood up and he was like punch drunk and then like fell back down and then stood up again. But they seemed happy. Za'Darius flexed over him. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was an interesting little sequence. But yeah, seeing both of the rookies get a little bit of a chance on those end arounds was nice. Watson did a ton of that at North Dakota State. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's something that he's capable of doing. And I thought he probably a slower receiver, a guy without his speed, probably doesn't even make it to the edge on his, because there was somebody kind of in the backfield on that that left side that he was able to just outrun to the corner and then turn it upfield a little bit for about what, eight yard gain, something like that. And then Dobbs was a little more of a reverse, right? Because there was handoff coming to the right, and then he took the pitch back to the left and picked up a first down. So nice little burst and wiggle from both of those guys. And I mean, Dobbs had a pretty efficient day receiving too. Four catches, 37 yards long, had a 23 yarder. That one was, I think, after a sack or something on like a second and long. So real nice, quick digging the offense out of a hole at that point with his long catch. So I thought he had a nice debut, and obviously, you know, Watson with the drop is going to be the thing that we're going to remember for a long, long time.
Yeah.
I gotta feel like the poor guy, if he ends up not like being a really good solid receiver for this team for some reason, everybody's always going to end up looking back at that play and thinking, well, if he had only caught that ball, maybe he wouldn't have been a bust. So
confidence.
Yeah.
Totally so changed, I mean, up 6 seconds.
Right. So obviously, like, I don't think that's going to be a career altering play, but it just sucks that, like I said, first snap of his NFL career, because he sits out the entire preseason, and that happens. I just feel bad for the kid.
So this is kind of a running back and receiver point. LaFleur and Rodgers basically said that they want to get all the receivers and all the running backs more touches. And I don't really understand how that works, because they were counting off, Aaron Jones got 10 touches or whatever it was, and AJ Dillon only got 10, and Sammy Watkins was basically out, you know, for most of the game, just like hanging outside and not getting a single touch. And they're like, we got to get those guys the ball more. What does that mean? Like, you want to be on the field for more often. Like, it's not like you were giving you were feeding another guy. It's not like they were feeding the tight ends or anything like that.
Right. I mean, there were four guys who had five targets or more in this game. Another couple with three and four targets. So like he spread around the targets pretty evenly across this whole group. I mean, hell, Dylan was the leader in targets with six and receptions with five. So this isn't like, you know, like a situation where you're feeding Devontae 15 targets a game anymore. I don't know how much more evenly you need to distribute the football than that.
Yeah. I didn't get that part really.
No.
Do you have any more thoughts on wide receiver other than like Sammy Watkins? He was on the field for three quarters, but we didn't see him until the fourth.
He existed. I still thought Winfrey was going to, when he got called up from the practice squad, I thought they were going to use him more on some of the Lazard stuff, the slot, the big slot blocking type of plays. Cause they used him that way a little more in the preseason. They used Watson a lot on that kind of thing. I mean, there was the touchdown run. He was kind of the end man on the line and held up pretty well, I thought there. So certainly that's something he's done in college too. So I wouldn't be surprised if they end up using him more in that role a little bit too, especially if Lazard ends up being out for any length of time. But that's about all I got.
What I thought was kind of interesting was like Cobb, Watson, and Dobbs all basically split the same amount of snaps. I didn't think that Cobb was going to play that many snaps. I mean, I know he's Rodgers' safety blanket almost to the point that it's like comical or ironic or something, right? But like, I didn't realize he was going to get so many snaps. I thought he was just going to play third downs.
Yeah.
That's really all he had done up until this point in, you know, his year in Green Bay under LaFleur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they certainly varied up the formations, right? Again, a lot of pony, a lot of two tight end stuff. So we saw a lot of 21, a lot of 12, a little bit of 22 here and there. I don't know. I guess I just kind of assume that that's probably how it's going to be moving forward. The big difference might be they might run a little more, you know, 21 if Lazard comes back and pull a tight end off. But it'll just be interesting to see how they decide to build this out moving forward.
As far as the tight ends go, I don't feel like there's that much to explain. Like, nope. Tonyan does look like he's healthy from his injury, which, like, he's on the field. It's kind of assumed, but it's nice to see him be able to run like the wind again.
Yeah, made a couple nice cuts, pulled away from a guy on that play-action crosser that he had that went for about 20 yards. So that was nice. Yeah, he looks faster in the open field than I remember. And maybe it's just that we don't tend to see him in the open field all that much, but he looked like he was moving pretty good there. So
yeah, I'm excited about him coming back. I put down a bet that he was going to lead the team in receiving yards, I think, and I took like the over of like 50 or something. Like I lost a ton of money today. so much. I needed the Jets on like a bunch of 6-point teasers. It was a bad weekend.
No.
Offensive line wise, kind of what was expected, right? Like,
yeah,
Newman's a little iffy. Hansen is not as good as Tom.
Yep,
that's kind of my takeaways. hopefully Runyon is healthy moving forward, because I mean, he's probably one of the more underrated guards in the league, I think.
Yeah, agreed. It was interesting that the running game seemed to get going a little bit after Runyon went out and Tom came in.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I don't know that was necessarily, you know, there's a direct causation there, but I mean, that next drive was Jones had his big 29-yard run off left tackle, I think. Mm-hmm. And then Dylan had a couple of big ones on that drive. So I thought that was kind of interesting. There was and Josh Myers is there, and you don't have to really think about him, which is nice. So yeah, at least appreciate that he looks like he's, you know, going to be a nice solid 8 to 10 year starter that you can pretty much plug and play and not really have to worry about. But yeah, again, a lot of those chips with Nyman, right, helping him out on that side. I think that's going to just end up being the situation that the Packers are going to have to live with until Bakhtiari comes back on that left side.
So the Packers only had one extra point or field goal, right? But I thought it was interesting, basically the way the protection worked out up front, right? You have your guys who are basically the offensive linemen, then you have the tight ends, then you have the wings on field goal team. Essentially everyone up front, like on the line to the tight end, was an offensive lineman outside of Dean Lowry, who ends up playing on the left side, and Slayton, who ends up playing at, I believe, right tackle. So that was kind of expected. So they were able to kind of fill out that protection team, even being down bodies on the offensive line. So I thought that was kind of nice. They also, at the left wing, they played an offensive lineman. At the right wing, they played Tyler Davis. That's a huge difference compared to last year, where, you know, Tyler Lancaster was playing the left wing. Yeah. And now you have an offensive lineman out there. That certainly will help.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, nothing to add. Just hopefully Runyon's back and this team can actually be at full strength on the offensive line and have a full complement of guys that they can use wherever they need to plug them in there.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break and then we'll get into the defense.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
And we're back. All right. Defensively, I just went through, before we recorded this, I charted the alignment and personnel that Green Bay was in. On the defensive side, 33 snaps in nickel, 15 snaps in base 3-4, 9 snaps in penny, which is like, think of like the 3-4 minus an inside linebacker plus a nickelback. That's what penny is. They played 3 snaps in a 4-3, 3 snaps in a 6-1, which is like 4 defensive tackles, if you want to think of it that way. And then only 1 snap in dime. So we do have some pretty big differences here. You know, basically last year, they would basically play 3 safety dime on any third and long, and they weren't really doing that, you know, in this game. 1 snap dime, it came with a 4 corner dime, which is really only what they started using after, what was it, the Baltimore game?
Yep, when they brought, yeah, when Kevin King came in for Henry Black, yeah.
Yeah, so these safeties, I mean, they had 6 safeties potentially to be available, and then they healthy scratched Tariq Carpenter, the 7th round rookie. So they ended up having 5, but really 3 of those spots are just like special teams only. So I guess that was kind of nice to see early on, because now the roster moves are starting to make a little bit more sense when we were worried, like, who the heck comes in on third and long at safety? Like, yep. Oh, they were just not going to play that guy.
Yep. Yeah. And it's the decision to keep Abernathy on the practice squad, or get him back on the practice squad, and keep Tariq Carpenter on the 53, given that Abernathy was active and brought up, you know, from the practice squad, Carpenter was deactivated for the game. That's all draft pick status, right? Like that's purely contract. That's purely the fact, I think, that, you know, they probably didn't want to take a little bit of a dead cap hit with whatever little 7th round signing bonus that the Carpenter has, because clearly they're comfortable playing Abernathy ahead of him, which I think is what we all expected, even when he got released and sent to the practice squad. But
yeah, because I think Carpenter was like safety 8 technically on the depth chart at one point. So
yeah,
this is where you see the front office coaching split, right?
Mm-hmm.
The front office can pick the 53, but that doesn't mean that they have to play.
Yep. I think we also noted that one dime snap was probably Keyshawn Nixon's only snap on defense of the game, and the poor guy got hurt and might have dislocated his shoulder on that play. So they looked like he was laying down on his back on the sideline, like having something pop back in. So we'll see where, you know, whether or not he's able to go this next week. But the 4-3-6-1 stuff, I mean, especially the 4-3, a lot of that was on that opening drive, which I thought was really interesting. That's not a look that I don't remember seeing that look really from this defense at all last year.
I remember they would do 4-3 stuff, not the way that they played it in this game, but they would use 4-3 personnel against offenses coming out. So like within 10 yards of a safety, like they would play that type of stuff. I remember they did it in the San Francisco game a couple times, but they didn't play it like the way that they did in this game. So think of like the normal 4-3, how you think it. That's kind of how they lined up, except for imagine the outside linebackers on the line of scrimmage. And those outside linebackers ended up being, you know, Devondre Campbell and Quay Walker, with Chris Barnes playing the mic. And now that Chris Barnes is hurt, who knows if they go back to that, if they're comfortable with McDuffie doing that, all that stuff. But yeah, they were doing it a couple times in this game. I thought it was interesting too, the 6-1 stuff. When people think of that, the 6, right? It's 4 interior defensive linemen, the linemen up front, and then 2 edge rushers. So it was them trying to get like really heavy on the line of scrimmage. That was in 4 minute going against Minnesota at the end of the game, where they knew Minnesota obviously was going to try to run the ball, and they were just trying to stuff that out. Outside of those, like what I would call exotics, right? So like being in nickel personnel, but like lining up in a very weird way, or being in the 3-4 and like lining up in a penny and having Devondre Campbell play in the slot, right? Like stuff like that. I would call those exotics. The Packers ran 6 exotics on the first drive and only 2 for the rest of the game on the defensive side. So if you watch that first drive, you're like, this Packers defense is a completely different thing that I've ever seen. And then the rest of the game was just basically like
Same old Joe Barry.
3-4 nickel penny. And it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah.
It was weird. And I don't know if it was because they did drive down the field on that first drive, right? And I don't know if it's just like them saying, let's go back to what we do. Let's do something simple. Let's execute. But like they weren't doing that either.
Yeah. I don't know. The 6-1 stuff was, or rather the 4-3 stuff, playing the three inside linebackers, right? Putting Campbell and Walker and Chris Barnes all out together. Yeah. That was a possibility that hadn't even occurred to me. I suspect probably hadn't occurred to most Packers fans out there. But yeah, to your point, I just wonder if it's one of those, well, it didn't work, so let's just trash it and
scrap it.
Kind of, yeah. Just kind of go to what we are familiar and comfortable running and try to revisit it again later.
And the Packers have scrapped stuff before, especially because of their linebackers. Like last year they opened up, they were really a nickel team, right? I mean, they were a nickel and 3-4 team that played dime on third downs. And the guys were Barnes and Campbell. Then they started playing Penny because they didn't trust Barnes to be a consistent player on the field. Then they brought in Jalen Smith. And then they had that weird thing where like Barnes would play in 3-4, Jalen Smith would play in the nickel. And then they were like, well, that didn't work either. So I guess we'll just go back to being a nickel team with Barnes and Campbell. It's kind of been a rotating, I don't know. It's just been like a rotating cast of like identities on the defensive side because of their linebacker play. And I think injuries aren't going to help them there either. I mean, if Walker goes down, who knows? Like if Walker's down for any significant amount of time, are they just going to play Penny again? Maybe.
Yeah.
They might, because do they want to play McDuffie every single down? I don't know if they do.
Yeah.
Especially when those guys have to play on special teams too. Like Campbell might have to play on special teams now just because of the body type.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Wilborn's coming up. That much I think is about a done deal. So this is just the early injuries are a relief that they were able to get all the guys back out of the practice squad that they wanted this year. I think that's something that we can at least be thankful for at this point.
For sure. And one thing that's I guess not really being talked about, but it's like a very nerdy thing to care about is, so players, when they go on injured reserve, they do still count against the salary cap, right? And I know that's like intuitive, but like people don't really think about it. So when you look at the Packers cap space and they're doing all these moves to get these guys that they put on IR in the preseason, you know, they're trying to get them injury settlements so they no longer count, you know, their full contract against the cap, and that you're going to have somewhere between $6 and $10 million in cap space by the time all of it is done, right? They can't afford to put too many people on IR. Like they might be in a position where like you just kind of like deal with it and you let the guys stay on your roster instead of putting them on IR, or the only guys you do put on IR are like guys on short-term injury. Like they're going to be very conservative with like actually paying guys out a full 6-17 weeks to not play football.
Yeah, it's I feel like I remember last year there were a couple of weeks where they carried 51, 52 guys on the 53. Mm-hmm. I think for that exact reason, right? They had put a couple guys on injured reserve, but didn't necessarily want to have the matching call ups from the practice squad to put them on full pay status. And so I got to imagine that was kind of an accounting thing last year. And yeah, I won't be surprised if they do that again, at least right with like Wilborn, for example. There's no reason not to just leave him on the practice squad for 2-3 weeks, let him use his call-ups, his game day activations, and then bring him back on, you know, bring him up onto the 53 at that point, because you're essentially saving what, three weeks worth of league minimum salary game checks as opposed to practice squad game checks.
Yeah, for sure. And we saw that a couple times last year, right? So we saw Winfrey get called up after he had played 3 games and he got 3 off of the practice squad because of COVID, right? Which is how you end up getting that extra third. Usually you can only get called up twice. You can get called up a third time if you're a COVID replacement. And then we saw Ladarius Hamilton get cut off of the 53, go back down to the practice squad and get called up off of the practice squad like immediately, right? Just weird little mechanics that are now available on the roster. as far as the defensive line goes, I don't know if I had too many takeaways. I mean, I thought it was interesting. Slayton got so much burn early on. It looked like Slayton was looking good.
Yeah,
Kenny Clark, that was obviously a monster.
Yep. Slayton was my one big, big takeaway, that it seemed like they rotated him in there a lot. I don't know what the snap counts look like. We'll check that out Monday morning. And I'll make sure to make a point of paying attention to that. But it'll be interesting to see if that was just purely Slayton taking reps from Kenny to keep Kenny fresh. But when he was out there, I mean, Slayton was playing well. Made a couple of nice stops. I think he had a couple of good stops in the running game in the second half too. So kind of keeping his momentum going from a strong preseason. But yeah, Kenny, as usual, kind of, you know, taking Garrett Bradbury to school. But outside of that, it didn't feel like there was a real consistent push from the rest of the front.
No, I agree. I think Lowry probably had more splash plays than Reed. And then,
yeah,
I don't know if Wyatt made a play that night. So
yeah, I saw him on the field once or twice chasing a play down from behind, and that was about it.
Yeah. As far as the pass rushers go, didn't really notice any of the backups, either good or bad, which is probably an improvement. Good sign. Yeah, I think that's probably a good sign that I wasn't paying attention that much. You know, Preston Smith, still a great edge setter. Rashawn Gary, still a great pass rusher who can't keep contained. I mean, it is what it is. I feel like we know who these guys are at this point. And until one of these backups step up, I don't think anything changes.
Yeah, we talked about it at halftime a little bit, but I was noticing in the second quarter that when they started rotating guys out a little bit, instead of batch rotating both of the starting edge rushers out for backups, they would do them kind of one at a time. And so you'd have, instead of, you know, swapping out both of them and having Garvin and Enagbare on the field together, it was like Preston Smith and Enagbare together, and then for a couple snaps, and then you'd swap those two guys out and you'd have Gary and Garvin, or some combination there, right? Where you at least still had one of your two starters on the field at all times, which seems to me to be a better approach, especially when the depth at that position is highly questionable and unproven. You'd rather find a way to make damn sure that you've got one of your two known quantities on the field at all times.
100% agree. I think that was the right call by them. And again, all these exotics and stuff that we were talking about, it's really to put their inside linebackers in a position to rush the passer, right? Yeah. And it was nice to see them take the step that way, because we really didn't see that last year. Like, I can think of a handful of times where they were using Devondre as a pressure guy, but they weren't really using it consistently. And the fact that like Quay can now play that Mike, right, that like Penny type of Mike, where he's the only inside linebacker, now allows them to be able to play Devondre on the edge. And I mean, he's built like an outside linebacker, right? And he's honestly probably better at it than any of the guys that they have other than Preston and Rashawn Gary. So if you can get, you know, you can save him more reps, save their legs a little bit and use him there, like, it's not a bad call.
Yeah, and you could do the same thing with Quay. I think you could use those guys a little bit interchangeably, and put them both on the edge from time to time.
I think that's
time.
Why when they went 4-3, so like if Campbell ever went down and Walker was healthy, right? I think that's why when they went in the 4-3, Barnes was the guy playing Mike, right?
Yeah,
and Walker and Campbell were the guys who were walked down, because I don't think a guy like Barnes would be able to do stuff like that. Like, he's
right. He's way too small, I think. Yep. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So, no, it'll be, man, just Quay brings the heat though, man. He is fun to watch fly to the football. He made some real nice sticks in this game. Young player, he's going to have to kind of clean things up in coverage a little bit, but that's kind of to be expected. But yeah, he's got a nice violent streak. He closes quick on the football. It was fun to see him shut down a few short gains in the passing game, especially out along the sidelines. I thought he really showed up pretty well in that aspect of the game.
And they had some tough matchups. I mean, you could tell this Minnesota Vikings team was well coached just based off of the matchups that they were able to get. Like, they were able to get in really specific formations that would then put like Preston Smith on Justin Jefferson or Quay Walker on Justin Jefferson. And it's like, you're only giving up what, 5 to 8 yards on those. You're not going to get an explosive out of it. But if you can get them into this really specific set, you can get a freebie on them, you know, yep. And they were able to do that. What they were doing was a lot of kind of what Green Bay does. So they were getting in, I guess it's closer to like what the Rams were doing with when Jared Goff was there. It's just 11 personnel under center stuff. And it becomes a really hard thing to do where if you want to play a too high defense, you're down a body in the box, especially, and they're in 11. So you don't know if they're going to be a gun passing team or if they're going to actually be willing to run it under center. And when you have guys like Thielen and KJ, who is doing the insert Alan Lazard stuff, right? I mean, it becomes a really hard thing to deal with. I mean, it's why Green Bay runs the offense the way that they did. I mean, it kind of sucked because you watch it defensively and you're like, oh, they're doing the Fangio coverage stuff on defense. Like the Vikings played Penny. Penny is something that like the Rams, Chargers, and Packers were basically the only teams that did last year. And then you watch them offensively and you're like, they're doing the same crap we're doing on that side of the ball too. This sucks. So it kind of felt like, it almost felt like, especially with the way Green Bay's defense so quickly went away from the pressure pack or the sub package stuff, it felt like Minnesota had a lot more film on what Green Bay likes to do than Green Bay had on Minnesota.
Yeah.
I guess is the way it makes. Like, I don't know if this is the same. Like, if you replay this next week, I don't think this game goes this way. But whatever, it's week one. It happened. You live with it.
Yep. Yeah, and I mean, next time you see this team, it'll be week 17 in Lambeau. You know, around New Year's, that'll I think affect pretty substantially what type of game we see. And yeah, then we'll have 15, 16 weeks worth of tape on this Minnesota team to get a little bit better feel for what they're trying to do.
As far as the DBs go, I think Arif was right about Eric Stokes. Not that he sucks, just that like the Vikings get the best of him.
Yeah, I was gonna say if the only times you ever see Eric Stokes are when he's playing against Minnesota, yeah, you probably think he's not any good.
Yeah,
he was really good against just about everybody else last season. So, but yeah, in this one early on, it seemed like he was getting picked on. And then they just, you know, continue to find ways to get him wide open. You know, once the corners were passing him off to the safeties.
And I think this is a really bad matchup for him just in terms of the spacing, because, you know, Rasul and Jair are guys who, how should I explain? Like they have better change of direction. They have better hips, right?
Yep.
And Stokes very much uses the sideline as a help defender in the same way, kind of like Richard Sherman did. And the fact that he's fast and is so long definitely helps him. But when a wide receiver, you know, the number one wide receiver and the number two wide receiver are lining up within 5 yards of the tight end, you really don't have very much help from the sideline, right? And I think that's what ends up biting him in the butt a little bit. But with that being said, I still think when you watch the film, just based off of the angles that were on the broadcast copy, we'll watch the all 22 tomorrow. But I think Adrian Amos had the worst game out of anyone. Yeah. He was getting burned, and he was just like was not switching on these guys when they were playing quarters. And if you don't switch, guys are going to be butt naked, wide open, 25 yards down the field like they were today.
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting quote from Rasul Douglas, and I love Rasul, right? Like he is one of the most entertaining interviews of any Packer I think I've ever seen. But there's a quote from him. He says that he doesn't feel like it was as bad as it seems, but we just let little shit happen and then more shit happened. And the next thing you know, just all of that shit happened. So
that's what it felt like to me. So
yeah, just, but when it's the same guy over and over and over again. And, I mean, the only play that we really saw that was notable with where Jair was actually covering Jefferson, Jefferson got flagged for OPI, and you know, Jair used the sideline as a defender, and he forced it was an incomplete pass anyway. So why were you not using him to shadow a little more? Why do the Packers just refuse to do that? Seems like whether it's under Pettin, whether it's Barry now, they just will not let Jair shadow. And I just don't understand it, especially when he said after the game that he was asking for it. He wanted to be matched up with Jefferson all game long. Like what's the thought process here that I'm missing that they're going by that they don't want him doing that?
I don't know. Because I would trust Rasul on the outside with Thielen.
Yeah.
Unless they're trying to do something like save his shoulder because of last season and they just paid him all that money. I don't know. I mean, you hear stories about the Packers front office and how weird they are about even considering paying a guy who plays in the slot just because they don't really value that. It's weird, right? Like they basically didn't offer Casey Hayward or Micah Hyde contract extensions because the coaching staff would use them in the slot. And it's like 70% of targets are happening, you know, in condensed formations where outside receivers are basically in the slot or coming out of the slot. So cover that area of the field. I don't get it.
Yeah.
The other thing about Jefferson is he wasn't even playing in the slot. I know people keep talking about moving him around, all that stuff. Like he had one snap in as the running back and pistol, right? That happened in the second drive. And then outside of that, he had a couple snaps in the slot, really not that many. The rest of it, he was just like lining up outside. And half the time he was lining up on Jair and then just running a crosser across his face because they had to pass it in coverage. And then the other guy wouldn't snap onto him. And it's like, what the heck? It can't be that easy.
Yeah.
It's got to be harder than that. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know. You had one guy that you really felt like could beat you on this Vikings offense, right? Like Adam Thielen's not going to be the guy to put up 200 yards and two touchdowns against you. He's just not that guy anymore. I didn't feel like Dalvin Cook was going to be the guy. You know, Jefferson is the guy you have to account for on every play, and to just let him somehow continue over and over and over with the explosive plays. It's maddening and it's frustrating to watch.
And Kirk, which sucked. Yeah. I can't think of one like could have been intercepted ball.
No,
that sucks.
Yeah,
I thought we were good for one or two or three.
Yeah, and there were a couple of plays where he got something away just before going down with a sack too, which was annoying. So I think Gary had the only sack of the game for the Packers defense, if I remember right.
I believe so.
That one early on in the first half. So. I was all on the Rashawn Gary Defensive Player of the Year campaign begins now, and then we didn't get a whole lot of pressure most of the rest of that game on him.
Couple other points on the defensive side, just like notes that I wrote down. That Gary sack happened on like a 3-by-1 front with a nickel behind it, so that was like very Seattle Seahawks. If you guys want to go look up that play. They basically have you think of offenses left, right on the offensive line straight down the center. So you have two defensive tackles and an edge rusher on one side and then one edge rusher on the other. So you basically guarantee one-on-ones on one side of the field. It's what the Seattle Seahawks used to do as their kind of nickel pass rushing package when all they were doing was running base cover three and stuff like that. That put Gary into a position where he was matched head up on a guard and he beat the crap out of that guard. So that was kind of fun to see that. I think that was the second drive of the game. They only ran one sub package after that, like one pressure package after that.
Yeah.
Very weird. I don't understand what the heck went on in that game. And then the other thing that I was going to say, The 11 personnel under center stuff that Minnesota was running, putting Green Bay in a really hard position to be able to fit the run when they were playing two high safeties. If you go to the fourth drive of the game, it's the second drive of the second quarter. KJ lines up basically as a wing tight end, which puts Russell Douglas in a spot where he has to play Sam linebacker. So he's like strong side outside linebacker. Think of like KJ Wright, right? That's something that like KJ Wright does. And Rasul was in that position, just overruns the run by about 5 yards into the backfield. Yeah. And Dalvin Cook was able to get some yards when he probably should have been stuffed for probably like -4. Those were the tricky things that like Minnesota was trying to do. And again, this used to be a thing that was unique with the Packers. Like no one really used, I guess like Tampa probably used like Chris Godwin in the same way that the Packers used Alan Lazard, but there are few and far between examples. And now that Minnesota's doing it, it's a little bit annoying that it's happening to our defense now.
Yeah. You don't like seeing your own tricks being used against you.
Mm-mm, no.
That's a bummer.
So I don't like if you're the Packers DC this week, if you're Joe Barry, like, what do you do? Like maybe you need to stunt more, but you jam up so many bodies on that defensive line running a 3-4 with the ends on the outside shade of the guards and the penny front, which is basically the same front on the defensive line. Like, can you even stunt those guys? And do you even want to stunt Kenny Clark, or do you just want to like have him run through the center's face? I don't know. I don't think there's a lot of easy answers other than next week Adrian Amos needs to pick up crossers. That would help.
Yeah, we'll see. Well, at least the Packers won't have a Justin Jefferson to deal with in the Bears receiving core next week.
Sure won't. You see Velus Jones inactive.
Yeah, he was a little banged up, wasn't he?
Oh, I don't know.
I think I saw he was banged up this week, but our old buddy Equanimeous got a touchdown for the Bears this week. So
attaboy. They have turf good for him. On Soldier Field now? I thought it was grass.
They changed out the grass. It's a different kind of grass. But yeah, it's still natural grass.
Slip and slide.
Oh my god. That was a mess today. I saw some of those highlights.
It was ugly.
Yeah. Yikes.
I feel like every Niners Bears game in Chicago looks like
that
too. The only other one I can think of is the Kaepernick game, which is another just torrential rainpour game.
Yep.
Where they threw like 10 times the entire game. That was crazy. Okay, we got to get into vibe checks, and then we'll be on our way. Offense vibe check. I'm at like a 6. These guys need to get healthy. I need these guys to get healthy. The fact that Alan Lazard said, they asked him on Friday what he needs to do to get ready and be able to play on Sunday, and he said, pray.
Not a great sign.
No, because I think it's going to be Sammy again next week, and then we're going to be like, oh, we should have given everyone the ball more touches. And it's like, you got to stay on the field to do that. So I don't know what to tell you, bud.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I mean, if Runyon misses any time, we know, Box probably not going to play based on that reporting. Like I'm feeling pretty pessimistic. I'm at like a 4, 4.5. Like it just felt clunky. And this is, coming off of that performance against San Francisco in the playoffs, where it was sort of the same thing, right? You had one thing go wrong early in the game, and then everything else just kind of goes to shit. I hope that they can turn this around and I don't know. Maybe it's as simple as not getting behind big, so you can rely on the running game a little bit more and not have to do your drop back passing game as much. But based just on today and where we're sitting with some of those injuries, like I don't feel great about this situation, at least in the immediate future. Hopefully they'll figure it out over the next couple of weeks though.
2 points here. First, I agree with you and I don't know how to quantify it, but that like getting punched in the mouth, right? Like whatever metric there would be for getting punched in the mouth, I feel like the Packers rank very low.
Yeah.
Because it's not like they're not a soft team in terms of how they play football, right? They can run downhill with AJ Dillon and they can get a lot of yards and tough yards doing it.
It almost seems like a weird mentality thing, right?
Yeah. It's like they go down 2 scores and it's just like, well, there that game went.
Yeah. I don't know if it's maybe that's a coaching thing, right? Maybe that's a coaching staff that doesn't really know how to handle, being down big and finding a way to come back. I don't know. Maybe that's the only thing I can come up with there.
The other thing I will say, the Minnesota Vikings might be one of the best teams that they have to face in like the next 2 months. You look at the schedule, Chicago at Tampa. Mentally, I'm already at 1-2. I'm like, we're going to beat the Bears. We're going to lose to Tampa. I've come to peace with that. Then after that, it's the Patriots, the Giants, the Jets, and the Commanders before they play the Bills. It's not the worst. Not the worst stretch. I mean, I could see them starting 1-2 and then being 5-2.
5-2, yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that's out of the question.
No, not at all. So I think how they respond in that Tampa game, this feels very much just like how things went last year, right? Come out of the gate, get smacked around in week one, have a divisional game that you probably should win at home in prime time in week two. Last year it was the Lions on I think it was Monday night. Now you got the Bears coming in. And then week three, you have a road game against one of your other NFC rivals, right? Last year it was the 49ers. They found a way to win that game in pretty miraculous fashion. And then, you know, this year, see how that goes in Tampa. And then an easy stretch to kind of get your feet back under you a little bit. It almost feels like things could set up very similarly to the way things went last year. We'll just kind of have to see what happens in week 3 in that Tampa game.
Speaking of Tampa, I'm watching Sunday Night Football as we record this. It's the third quarter. It looks like Donovan Smith, their left tackle, just went down.
He did, yeah.
Goodness gracious. These guys are going to have no offensive linemen by week 3.
I mean, if that's the Packers bad. Have
I mean, you're talking about cluster injuries at a position you can't afford cluster injuries at.
If the Packers still have a healthy defensive front, that could be a big game-changing matchup in that game if Gary and Kenny Clark can get going.
Yeah. Defensive vibe check. I feel still pretty good about the defense. I just feel like they're so talented. I know Stokes had some hesitation. Quay Walker looks a little bit young. Amos might have had his worst game in Green Bay. That seems pretty uncharacteristic for him. He's a team captain and all that. I'm going to say like a 7 moving forward. I understand this game wasn't good, but I mean, it's not like they allowed 50 points today either.
No, I'm with you. I'm right about that same spot. And you think of what do they do after halftime? They gave up 2 field goals. That's even with, you know, Jefferson, you know, getting another couple of catches for 70 yards or something in the second half. That's a solid, you know, they gave the offense a chance to get back in this game after a rough first half. So I think they're going to be okay on that side of the ball. I think health again, you know, we'll see. Hopefully Quay is okay and can come back. But yeah, I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet as long as safeties figure out what the heck they're doing.
Overall, just like team vibes, I guess I said 6 and 7. So like 6.5. Yeah, that's probably fair.
Yeah.
That's good for me.
Yeah. I'm like a 6. Just, I don't know what I was expecting. Right. Like we saw this happen last year in week 1, we got a whole, you know, whole new Minnesota staff. And a team that we're catching Minnesota at the wrong time, right? When they're fully healthy, they've got all their guys. If you play this game, like you said, a couple weeks later, maybe you've got some more film on what they're trying to do. You can prepare for them a little better, and you got to figure that, you know, with some of the personnel they've got, especially on defense, maybe there's a little attrition there injury wise and you don't get them at full strength. So just an unfortunate time to play them, I think. And, I'm going to not panic like I did after week 1 last year and not just hit the button. So,
don't hit the fire Joe Barry button.
I'm not after week 1. I'm not there yet. We're like you said, there's a real good chance this team is 5-2 after 6 weeks from now. So we'll see what happens.
All right, guys. We'll keep it tuned into the feed this week. We're gonna have shows for you guys daily. Go to acmepackingcompany.com. We're gonna have a billion breakdowns. We're gonna have snap counts immediately Monday morning. So keep it tuned in. Hopefully we get some good injury news in these next couple of days.
Fingers crossed.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.